been messing people up for quite a long time, and I'm kind of sick of it. So here we go. Anti-science God is the guy that says, in order to believe in me, you pretty much need to park your brain. Okay? If you're going to believe in me, the God of Jesus, the God of salvation, okay, you're going to have to steer clear of all those biology courses and geology and archaeology. I don't want you reading too much. I don't want you snooping around too much into history, because honestly, I'm afraid that if you get too far into that stuff, you're going to start losing your faith, because you're going to run into things that are just opposed to me, and I'm not going to have it. So stay away from all that science stuff. Me, science, we do not mix. Okay? That is a guy I want to blow out of the water this morning. And already I've got your attention, because you're like, what is he going to say about that? All right. I don't think there's anybody, one group in particular, that's responsible for creating anti-science God. I think the media has helped a lot. I think that Christians have helped create him. I think that people that have been burned by Christians have helped create him. Okay, I don't think there's anybody that's particularly responsible. I think we all kind of share equally in this thing. I didn't realize anti-science God was really that big a deal. I guess I was kind of sheltered. I don't know. I came from Rodman. Some of you know where Rodman is. And Rodman, back in the day, you know, some people were church people. Some people weren't church people. Some people had Bibles. Some people didn't. And generally, everybody just kind of respected everybody else. There wasn't really any big to-do. I didn't particularly know everything about Christianity. I was a church person. I wasn't such a great, maybe a Christian, but I was a church person, and I was familiar with the stories. Some of them were mysterious to me. Some of them weren't. But generally, I just kind of, you know, I made peace with that, and I believed that there was a God, and so that was fine. I didn't see a problem with Christianity and science. I didn't have an issue with being in science class. But then I went away to college, and I left the comfort of my little Rodman community. And that's when I met anti-science God. So I got accepted into a tech school. Lots of engineering students, okay? Fairly well-known one, Clarkson, up in Potsdam, okay? That's where I went to school. Business student in an engineering school. I don't know what I was thinking, but that's where I went. And I had, you know, re-sparked my faith in God, and I had something working inside me. And so I thought, you know what, I'm going to bring my Bible to college. Right? Bring your Bible to college. That's no big deal. I planned to read it. So I put it on a shelf next to my bed in case that were to ever happen. And little did I know, I would get more mileage out of that Bible sitting on a bookshelf in my dorm room than I ever did when it was at home and I would occasionally look at it. And what happened was, we got to know the kids across the hall, and you know how it is in a dorm room situation or a barracks or wherever, you know, you get to know people across the hall, and they make their way over, and they peek their head in because they're bored or they don't know what else they should be doing other than studying. And so they pop their heads in, and they, you know, hey, what's going on? And so about first thing, one of the kids I got to know, his name was Joel, I think, he looks at me, he goes, Jimmy James. That's what I was, Jimmy James. Okay, that was my AOL screen name, if that takes you back. All right, I was Jimmy James NY. And so he pops his head over and he looks at me, he's, Jimmy James, is that a Bible on your shelf? I looked up, I looked at the Bible, yep, that's what that is. He's like, do you read the Bible? I backed up for a second and I told the most positive, hopeful lie I ever said. Sometimes. Sometimes I do. Sometimes I plan to. And there it was. And he was flabbergasted. And he peeks his head back across the hall. He says, hey, Paul, come over here, quick. And he goes, what? What's up? He's like, Jimmy James has a Bible. I'm like, okay, yes, we have established that I have a Bible on my bookshelf. Let's go on, you know? And he's like, are you a Christian? I'm like, I aspire to be. I want to be. I'm not a very good one, but I'm thinking about it. And so they were flabbergasted. It didn't stop there. They started stopping people in the hallway. They're like, hey, did you know Jimmy James has a Bible in his room on his bookshelf? I think he reads it. You know, stuff like that. I didn't get what the big deal was. I really didn't. I was like, whoa. Yeah, whoop-de-doo, I bet you've got a science book or a biology book on your desk. What's the deal? And I didn't really understand how much people struggle with the idea of science and God until I started taking my first class of the first week. It was called Great Ideas in Western Culture. Other people had other nicknames for it. I won't get into that. But it was all about, you know, the different literary contributions that have led up to our society as it is. And what would you know, what was the first book they had us read as an assignment? The Bible. And not just any part of the Bible. The first book. So, yeah, really, really. They had us read the Quran, they had us read other things, but they had us read the first book of the Bible. And so, this is the very one they actually made us go down to the bookstore and purchase. I think this was like, you know, $58 or something, because it's the school bookstore, you know. So I held on to it. I've read it a little since, but that was the one. And so I'm sitting in a room with like 20-some other Clarkson University engineering students, and I'm like one of like three business students, maybe, okay? And I'm sitting there, and we're reading some of this stuff, and most people are like, just kind of, this is interesting or whatever. Why are we reading this? I came here to do engineering. I don't know why we're reading the Bible, you know? And so some of them were respectful. But I'm telling you what, some of them were like really unsettled about this thing. And some of them thought this was hilarious. Some of them thought this was a joke. Some of this just complained. Some of them complained a lot. And I didn't really, really get what the problem was. I mean, a lot of this stuff didn't make any sense to me. I wasn't settled on what it all meant. You know, the Adam and Eve and how come Cain was able to find a wife even though his mother was the only female on earth. I don't know. I don't know. It doesn't make any sense to me. But there it is. You know, there's a lot of little mysteries in there that aren't really solved easily. And so I was kind of unsettled, and I was kind of surprised when one of this kids, his name was Frank, he kind of spoke up, and he was asked to read some of it out loud for everybody, okay? And it was killing him. It was killing him to read this story out loud. It was Adam and Eve and, you know, all that stuff. And he just stops in the middle of it, and he's just like, you know, I got to stop here for a second. He's like, I don't pretend to know everything about Christianity. I mean, I understand this Jesus was probably like a really great guy and all, but if you have to believe this stuff in order to be a Christian, I don't think I could take it seriously. And I realized then, the struggle is real for people. The struggle is real. See, the thing is, here's this book, and at the beginning of it, in the first like three pages actually, are all the wildest sounding stories that sound like they explain the beginning of the world, and yet here are educated people who have listened to all kinds of other very, very, very intelligent people who have alternative ideas about how things began and how things came into being, and they've studied and looked back, and maybe they don't actually, hardly any of them ever agree with each other, but here's the thing, neither do Christians. Christians don't even agree with each other about the beginning of the world, and they've got a book for them outlining exactly how it happened. So, the struggle is real. And I had a little sympathy for the guy. I did. I mean, yeah, if I looked at this book and the same book that told me about Jesus and what he was like was the same book that had these wild stories in it that seemed to defy explanation, you got to have a little sympathy for the guy, you know? Because if Christians can't even agree about what that stuff means, is it literal? Is it metaphoric? Is it exactly real 6 days? Like, if they can't even agree, why should somebody that has no idea what to think be able to agree by just opening it up and reading it? Struggle is real. But here's the thing. The irony here is that the Bible itself actually clears up the issue. See, the issue is, how is an educated person from 2017 supposed to be able to look at this stuff, make some kind of sense of it, and then actually put their faith in it, even though it almost seems impossible to know what the answers really are? I mean, was it a worldwide flood, really, or is it just localized? You know, how come Methuselah got to be so old, and yet his kids didn't get to be that old? They're still kind of old, but they only seem to, you know, why is all this stuff doesn't make any sense? And the irony is that the Bible itself actually helps everybody out. And I want to take you to something that Paul said. This is from Paul, the guy who took the lead in taking the church into the Roman world, which, by the way, had its own very, very, very different ideas about where the world came from. They had like 12 gods and like an umpteen mini gods that were like subsets of the gods. And if you came in with your own other version of God, that was okay as long as you honored the other 12 gods. And they had all kinds of ideas. They had all kinds of very smart people. I mean, it was the most advanced civilization up to that point. At least that's what everyone believes. And this is Paul writing to a church in the Roman Empire that he helped start. And this is what he advises these Christians. He says, and this is 1 Corinthians chapter 15, all right? 1 Corinthians chapter 15. He says, "Now, brothers and sisters, I want to remind you of the gospel I preached to you, which you received and on which you have taken your stand. By this gospel you are saved, if you hold firmly to the word I preach to you, otherwise you have believed in vain." So remember how this all started, guys. You know, what I first brought to you, that's what sparked your faith. That's what got this whole thing rolling. I received something first, then I brought it to you, and you took off with it, and you started to believe, and you changed, and things happened. He said, remember how this thing all started, guys. Keep the main thing that brought you to faith in the first place. And here comes the main thing. Verse 3, "For what I received, I passed on to you as of first importance, that Christ died for our sins according to the Scriptures, that he was buried, that he was raised on the third day according to the Scriptures, and that he appeared to Cephas," that's Peter if you don't know, "and then to the 12. After that, he appeared to more than 500 of the brothers and sisters at the same time, most of whom are still living, though some have fallen asleep," that means they died, "and then he appeared to James, the brother of Jesus, then to all the apostles, and last of all, he appeared to me also." That's what Paul brought when he came into Corinth. That's what he brought. That's what Paul brought. Think about that. Think about that. You walk into a society, it's got at least 12 officially recognized gods with umpteen miniaturized versions of other kinds of gods that aren't quite as powerful as the first 12 gods. Tons of smart people everywhere, recognized scholars, academics. And he comes into this city, and what he brings is, "Guys, listen. Something happened to me, an experience, and I have to share it with you. Something happened to me, and I need to share that with you. I can't help but share what happened." He doesn't bring another story or a version about the origin of the world or the stars or how things came into alignment or whether or not the world was round or flat or anything. He brings the resurrection. He brings the resurrection. That's what he's talking about. "For what I received, I passed on." That he was buried, that he was raised on the third day. Listen, guys, this guy we committed our lives to, first me, then you, okay, he died for us, for a personal sacrifice. It wasn't just because he died because somebody killed him, but he actually died on purpose for us. And he wasn't just like a little bit dead, or maybe questionably dead. You know that Monty Python movie where, "Bring out your dead, bring out your dead. No, wait, I'm not dead yet." You know, it's not like that, okay? It's not even a question. He is so dead, he is buried in a desert tomb for days dead. And then he got back up and had the most fun walking back into town that anybody's ever had. Think about that. He was definitely, positively, absolutely not breathing, not heart beating, nothing. And everybody knew it, everybody saw it, and then he's not anymore. And the experience Paul had was that after he was not dead, he didn't just kind of like, oh, okay, I'm going to make my way out of town. No, he showed up. He showed up. He found his followers. He found his peeps. He found his homies. He found his disciples. He found people that were generally following him, this big crowd of people, 500-some people. And then he found his own brother. He found Peter, the lead disciple. He found everybody that had a stake in his ministry while he was alive, and he showed himself, and he kicked around for a while. Now, here's the thing about that. Here's the thing about that. It's one thing for a guy to say, I'm the king of the world, and then die. I mean, that happens. That's been happening all throughout history. Somebody says, listen, I am kind of a big deal. I'm kind of a big deal. You should listen to me. Guess what happens? Eventually, they die. They're not a big deal anymore. You forget about them. You know, they're very big deal guys throughout history. We only know anything about them because they were smart enough to leave behind a little bit of trail of paperwork so somebody could discover it later and go, wow, this guy was important. It's a whole nother story when somebody says, hey guys, listen, God has sent me to be the king of the world. I'm going to teach you how to live in the kingdom of God that is coming on its way. It's actually here as we speak. But here's the thing. I'm going to get killed. And you're going to be horrified and terrified, and you're going to wet your pants and run home and rethink your lives. And then I'm going to show back up again, and then your minds are going to be blown. You're going to have so much happiness and joy. No, people are going to wonder, what in the world is wrong with you? And then everything is going to be different. And then do it. If you said that and then did it, okay, I don't care who you are, that guy's got your attention. That guy's got your attention. Even if you're not somebody that's given to believe in miracles or supernatural activity or any kind of anything like that, if somebody comes to you and says, listen, I had a friend who was definitely, positively dead. He said he was sent by God to be the king of the world and lead people into the kingdom of God. And then he actually died. He did. It happened just as he predicted. And then he came back. Just as he predicted, I mean, I don't care if you're not given to that sort of thing, it's got your attention at least, doesn't it? People don't come up with that one too often. And there isn't really a bigger trick to pull off. I mean, you know, back in the days of Pharaoh and Moses, Pharaoh had magicians that supposedly could make a walking stick become a snake or something like that. I don't know, they must have been really, really good. But nobody has pulled off the resurrection as of yet, except for this guy. At least that's what the claim is. That's what Paul says you keep front and center. You keep the resurrection of Jesus front and center in the story of faith. Wherever you go, whatever you share, whatever you do as a church, the resurrection of Jesus is the centerpiece. You see, doesn't matter what you know about science, doesn't matter what your opinion about history is, doesn't matter what educated people you listen to, if you believe, if you do your homework and you come to the conclusion that Jesus really is exactly who he said he was, if a guy actually has the power to bring himself back from death, I don't care whatever else your queries and your mysteries are, you'll figure that stuff out later. Because whatever this guy says for you, you're going to hang on like it's gold coming out coming out of his mouth, coming off the pages. If you had a friend that was just a really smart guy and a teacher, and you spent a lot of time with him, you know, probably like most of us, we listen about, you know, a third or a quarter of the time. Does that sound about right? Most of the time, if we're lucky, we're really actively listening about a quarter or 30% of the time. Okay, throw in that this guy does miracles. You know, maybe that boosts his retention level. You know, our retention levels have been hanging out with this guy. But most of the time, you know, and then the guy dies. What happens? You know, slowly but surely, you just kind of, well, you know, those were the good old days. That was fun. Yeah, I remember he said that, I think. But, you know, if somebody predicts their death, and then undoes it, that changes everything. You'll be playing back the tapes every day. What did he do that time? What did he mean by that? What did he say? We better get this down. We better make sure that this isn't forgotten. I mean, no, we were the ones there to see this. We were the one there that can remember this and record this. We better get this thing down on paper someplace, so that this won't get lost if we, you know, kick the bucket suddenly. Okay. And that's exactly what the disciples did. That's exactly what his followers did. They, from then on, they kept the resurrection of Jesus front and center because they had had a personal experience with this. It wasn't some story that had been told to them. It was directly real, absolutely personal, and that's what they shared with people. And that's what Paul tells everybody in the Corinthian church. Listen, guys, this is the thing by which you were saved. Period. There were no add-ons. He didn't say, this is the thing by which you were saved, plus you must believe in a literal six-day creation. He didn't put that in there. It was just belief in a risen Savior and commitment to his way of life that he prescribed. It wasn't any other add-ons. You've got to believe in this other thing first, or else you can't really be a Christian. Are you sure you believe in a worldwide flood? If you think it was localized, I question how saved you are. You know, there was no other add-ons. Leave the add-ons at home. Leave the add-ons at home. It's cool if you have an opinion about that. It's cool. Look it up. Research it. Have really interesting discussions about it. But don't tack it on as a must to be a believer in Christ, because Paul didn't. Neither should you. Now, I want to get scientific here for a second. Can I do that? I'm kind of an analytical guy. I like to do this, if you can't tell. I think Paul had it right. I think Paul had it absolutely right, and this is why. Because pretty much the main link, the main explanation for why we get to be here 2,000 years later, assembled together in our free time to talk about this thing, or for you to just listen to me blab on about it, is because Paul was right. Because what Paul did brought the gospel, and the gospel was received, and it was received again and again. And not only was it was received in a couple or 300 years of the worst possible time for anybody to ever decide to become a believer in Jesus. Think about this for just a second, okay? Crucifixion. That alone should have shut the gospel down. That alone should have been enough. Crucifixion, in case you didn't realize this, okay, in Rome, the best minds in the most advanced civilization at the time all put their heads together to decide what is the best combination of the most public, most dramatic, and most extreme suffering that we could compile all in one, so that we can use this to shut anybody down that might want to follow up in the footsteps of somebody we're going to punish. They came up with crucifixion. You're high up and visible. You can be seen over the crowds. They can post you along the road if they have a whole bunch of people to crucify, so that when people come into town, they go, I don't want none of that. They don't mess around here. The most drawn-out suffering they could create. Suffocation, slowly, very, very slowly, by being hung with your arms stretched out apart as wide as they can possibly be stretched out. And by the way, you know, you're in the blistering hot sun with nothing to drink and nailed, okay? And that's only after you've had most of the skin on your body ripped off by leather cords with sharp bones and pieces of metal and iron and all kinds of things attached to them on the ends, glass, all that kind of stuff. You know, they'd crack, and then they'd have to rip it back off because it had latched into your skin. That's what exactly it was meant to do. Crucifixion was designed to make absolutely sure that if you had any inkling of following up in this guy's footsteps, you would wet your pants, go home and rethink your life, and never bring it up again. That should have stopped them right in their tracks. And the Bible itself says it did. For like days. And it should have. Except that something happened. Something had to have happened. I mean, if you want to get kind of scientific about it, perform a sociological experiment and crucify somebody. Please don't, but I'm just saying, and then tally the results of your survey. Who here would be interested in doing the same thing that guy just got in trouble for? Nobody. That's who. Nobody. Nobody's going to witness their best friend go through all of that and then die and then say, you know what? I'm just going to get right back out there. You know what? You fall down, you dust yourself back off. You get right back up on the old horse again. You don't leave that just sitting. Come on, you've got to continue the work, boys. That's not what they did. That's not what they recorded. If you read the Bible, you know it's true. That's not what they recorded. They all hid. Run away, flee. Peter denied that he had anything to do with Jesus ever. Three different times with Jesus in listening distance. He was horrified and terrified, as any of us would be. And maybe you're a big tough guy. I'm not impressed yet. You watched what's about to happen in a crucifixion, sit there and witness it, and then come back and tell me how tough you think you are. Crucifixion alone should have shut it down. It didn't. Why? Why did the church grow explosively for the first 200 or 300 years through some of the worst persecution that's ever been government sanctioned? Nero, who was around toward the end of Peter and Paul's life, had Christians put on stakes like tiki torches and covered in tar and lit a fire at government parties. Wives and husbands had people taken from them, sometimes children, sometimes each other. People were killed for doing what these disciples were doing and spreading this blasphemy in the Roman kingdom. Okay, it was some of the most dangerous time. Why did it happen? Because something happened. People don't just pick this stuff up and run with it because, oh, that sounds like a nice little religion, even though I could die for it. No, they have to be really utterly convinced that there is something waiting for them on the other side, that the person that propagated this thing actually knew what he was talking about for real. And I don't know if you're anything like me, you better show me something. You better show me something real before I give my life away. And that is the something that happened that blew this thing out of the water. It all hinges. Everything we stand for today hinges on whether or not he really did or whether he didn't. Did he really come back from the dead or didn't he? Did he really do it? Was he exactly who he said he was, exactly the way he said he was, or wasn't he? If he wasn't, well, cool teachings from a great guy in history. He's another footnote in a sixth grade elementary textbook, which, by the way, he is. He's in there. Was when I was in school. But if he really did it, everything is a different story. Everything. When I kind of got my wits about me, in college in this class, and I kind of said to myself, well, maybe this, yeah, I could see why that would be an issue. I never really thought about it for myself. You know what I did? I started to really rethink some things. I don't know. That really doesn't make any sense. There do seem to be some gaps here. I can't solve them, and nobody I know seems to be giving me an answer that works for me, you know, to explain away these things. And some people seem absolutely dead set that this is, you know, those first three paragraphs are absolutely 100% literal. Other people I talk to don't seem to be so sure, and they seem to be mad at each other for it and thinking that they're not really faithful believers. I don't know why that doesn't persuade me much. I really started to rethink some things, and then I just kind of took a pause from faith for a while. Like, you know what? I don't know. And when you don't know, you just kind of walk off for a while. So that's what I did. But I'll tell you what happened. I got home. I got back into church just because I wanted some friends around that I knew, and I'd been away from high school, so everybody runs and flees after high school's over. And so I was in the church for a while, and we're getting into this study about the purpose of your life. And so I just got bored one day, and I had this very book home, this very one, and I just was reading it on the couch. I actually had a surgery, so I was recovering from surgery, and I was reading it, and I just, you know what? I said, you know, I am so sick of not knowing. I'm so sick of not being sure. I'm just going to look at this stuff finally and just read the stuff that Jesus actually said. And you know what happened? I started to believe it. I started to believe that the man that said the things that I was reading absolutely, positively must be the guy that he says he is, because nobody has ever said anything quite that true before. And said it in black and white again and again and again and again. I didn't have any of the answers about history. I was not a geology expert. There are plenty of people in plenty of colleges and plenty of countries that know way more than I do about history and archaeology and biology and evolution with a little e, evolution with a big e, and you know, all that kind of stuff, the monkeys. I don't know. Does anybody even believe that anymore? I don't know. It seems like that's not even popular. But I didn't have all the answers. But I did come to a conclusion about who Jesus was. And that was enough. That got me started. That got me back in the game. I came to a conclusion by looking into it myself and doing my homework that this guy had to have been who he said he was. And it wasn't just because he was really smart or sharp or intelligent or charismatic. Because it could only have happened that way. It was too real. Everything about the story was too real. I mean, if it had been made up, if I was going to make up a story to get you to believe in Jesus after he was killed on the cross, I would have the disciples have been a lot less cowardly. Don't you think? I mean, isn't that the most embarrassing thing that could be written about you in history? And you put your life on the line, and you got behind and backed this Jesus, and then he gets killed, and you run away, run away, run away, run away. You're nowhere to be found. You're hiding in a house somewhere with as many of your friends as you can pack in there, and the rest had to go some other place. Is that what you would put in there? I don't think so. That's a little too real. That's what got me started. I looked into the story and what was actually being claimed by Jesus and what he actually claimed about himself. And I said, this has got to be too true to be anything else than the real deal. That's what it took. That Oxford Study Bible, probably like, actually cost $2 to print. It's $58 in the Clarkson bookstore in Potsdam, New York. I'm not bitter, just saying. Listen to me. I think this is, if you believe what I'm saying about this, if you believe what the Bible is saying about its own story, this is good news for everybody. Listen, hear me out here. Good news for everybody. Okay? If you are a Christian, and you are kind of, if you feel totally inadequate to talk about the faith that drives you with any other human being in the world, because you're afraid, you know, I'm going to bump into somebody that's going to know a whole lot about some subject that I don't know about, and they're going to ask me a whole bunch of questions I'm not going to be prepared for answers with, even though you might study, and even though you read some books, you read The Case for Christ, you read some C.S. Lewis stuff, you know, even though they're probably going to come at me with some whackball theory I've never heard of, or they're going to come up with something I can't believe in, but I don't know how to defend against it. You know, if you've ever been wound up about that stuff and feel like, I feel like a pile of shame and garbage because I am not smart or intelligent enough to go toe-to-toe with people, here's the good news. You don't have to have all of that in your back pocket. Paul didn't bring it into the game. Actually, you really need to just be prepared to answer two questions. Why do you think Jesus was who he said he was? And why do you believe that? Was he who he said he was, and why do you personally believe it? What's the evidence that you see? What is your personal experience with this Jesus that died so long ago but supposedly rose again? What in the world drives you to believe that that could be true? I've heard people say at different times, I really don't mean to offend anybody, I really don't, but sometimes I've heard people say, you know, we need to send our kids to college prepared to defend a literal six-day creation or their faith is going to get lost. I'm like, no you don't. Is that what your faith is built on? Is that what saves you? Your faith that the flood was really worldwide? Is all of your faith hinge on that linchpin? Does all of your faith hinge on whether or not it was really just Adam and Eve, or maybe there was a couple other couples that we didn't hear about? You know, does all of that hinge on a literal interpretation of those stories, or an interpretation that somebody else says is the real literal one versus the other literal one versus somebody else's opinion of what it really literally means? If that's going to cause your faith to become unraveled, you've got a problem. You've got a problem, because the real issue is not Genesis or interpretations of it. The real issue isn't how Moses parted the waters exactly. I mean, miracles are really cool, and the Old Testament tells us a lot about the character of God that we can't get elsewhere. There's all kinds of stuff in there that's extremely important for us, and it helps our faith once we become Christians, but it's not the centerpiece. It's not the centerpiece. If you believe, if you are sure in your heart, confident that this man who lived 2,000 years ago is the one that he said he was, sent by God to be the king and the power and the authority all over all the earth, if you make that conclusion for yourself, you can work all the other stuff out as you feel it's necessary, but that isn't going to unravel you. When you come into a college class or some other situation and somebody brings up something that you never heard of and says, look, there, I've proved it, matter can come from nowhere, or the protein particles can only do this in a certain order and create a man out of an ape, and it's possible after, you know, you're not going to come unraveled. People can come up with you with all kinds of different ideas and all kinds of different conclusions. And yes, it's cool that you can defend what you actually think about Genesis. Look it up, read it, do the research. By all means, get into that stuff. It sometimes helps people come along, and it helps people think, it gets them interested. It sparks their faith a little sometimes, but it's not the centerpiece. And you can be a Christian without having an idea of what you believe exactly about the origins of the earth and how people came to be the way they are and how many days exactly it really took and whether or not it was a metaphor or whether or not it was literal. You can be a Christian. Period. Paul said so. Look back for a second at that verse. Says, now, brothers and sisters, I want to remind you of the gospel I preached to you, which you received, on which you have taken your stand. It's by this gospel that you are saved. Otherwise, you have believed in vain. Period. This is the gospel that this man Jesus, in accordance with the scriptures, showed up, taught, died for us, was resurrected and seen. That is the linchpin of Christianity. So the good news for everybody is you don't have to be an expert geologist, an expert biologist. You don't have to have all the answers about history. You don't have to have it all in a bag somewhere. And I think the good news for some of you that might not consider yourselves Christian is this. I hope that you thank me for this afterwards. You know, if you're not Christians, I'm sure you're going to come up and, you know, thank the pastor or whatever. I hope you thank me for this. I'm just making your life a little easier. Whether or not you come to the conclusion that he was or that he wasn't, that he did or that he didn't, I'm going to make your life easier, okay? Because if you are stuck and stagnant and trying to figure out what to do with all of this faith stuff, and how am I supposed to believe this when I'm not really convinced of this other thing, and the other people say this isn't quite exactly true, you don't have to live in that world for very much longer, because what you can do is fast forward, zoom in on the exact question of the hour, and not waste a whole lot of time everywhere else. Was he or wasn't he? Did he or didn't he come back from the dead? And you can come up with your own answer for that, which you will. And if you believe that he didn't, well, you know what? I'm saving you a whole lot of wasted time. You don't have to spend any more time at home occasionally thinking about it, going, oh, I don't know. Oh, I'd like to. I think he's kind of cool, but I heard this. You don't have to spend any time in that place anymore. You can zoom right in to the bottom line and make a call based on the evidence that you see or that you don't see. Or you can waste, you can stop yourself from wasting a whole lot of time, because if you zoom in and you say, you know what, yes, he did. Well, you're going to get right into it. You're going to get right into it, because if you believe that he did, what else is there but to take it wholeheartedly? A man that says, I'm about to die, God sent me, and then I'm coming back, and does it, I'm telling you what, that man has your attention, and your attention, and your attention, and your attention, and all your attentions. All your little attentions. He's got them. Now, how do you do that? You just pick up the Bible and read it and decide, well, that might help. I would start there. I would start somewhere in the New Testament. I'd read Matthew, Mark, Luke, or John, or all of them. They all have different perspectives, different people, different perspectives. Some of them were there for some things and others weren't for other things. Read those things. But listen, I'm not selling a book here, okay? I don't make anything from this, but there was a book published several years ago by a guy named Lee Strobel. It was called The Case for Christ. Lee Strobel was a Chicago Tribune writer. Okay, a journalist, a real live journalist, the Chicago Tribune, and he was a Pulitzer Prize winner, okay? So he was good at what he did. He was not a slack journalist. And one day, his lady friend comes back, and she has become a Christian, and he is really annoyed, long story short. He can't believe that somebody that he would link up with would fall for this stuff. And so he's like, he takes this thing very, very personally, and he decides what he's going to do is not just is he going to not show up to church. No, 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 no. He's not going to, he might go to church here and there, but he's not going to become a Christian. He's actually going to make it his personal ambition to write a bulletproof book, a bulletproof journalist work, okay, to completely and utterly disprove the existence of Jesus, that he was ever resurrected or anything like that. And so what he does is he goes out and he talks to all of the smartest people and all of the most important aspects of the story. He talks to scientists, he talks to people from Princeton and Yale and all kinds of different, you know, smart places, and he patches it all together as a journalist should, and he's building a case to say, look, this is finally, utterly, absolutely silly. Can we just get rid of this idea and rid religion from the United States of America once and for all? Could we just put an end to it? And what happens is, the more research he does and the more he builds the story together, he realizes that the evidence is unanimous, but not the way that he thought. not the way that he thought. And so instead of being one of the Christian's greatest enemies in print, it became one of the best books in the past 10 or 15 years. The Case for Christ by Lee Strobel. There are things like that out there. I would suggest that one. It's a good one. If you're kind of sciencey, if you're kind of analytical, I'm telling you what, you're going to love that book. But look into it for yourself. Don't do what I did and just sit on the couch and think about it occasionally and then let it go. You waste a lot of time that way. Whether you believe it or whether you don't, you're going to waste a lot of time. So look into it. Was he or wasn't he who he said he was? That's my take on it. I'm going to pray for y'all. I'm not even Southern, but I'm going to pray for y'all. And I'm going to pray for everybody you talked about. Whether you're thinking about it, whether you thought about it already and you said no, whether you've been a Christian a long time and this is just kind of old hat for you, I just want to include you all in this wrap-up in front of God. Lord, I ask you on behalf of every single person in this room, would you help us keep the main thing, the main thing? Would you keep what you did front and center in our lives, Lord? If we really believe that, would you keep that front and center? Would you keep that, what Paul said was first priority? The gospel which was preached to us, a personal experience with you, a risen Christ, a risen Savior. God, if people are looking, if their hearts hope for answers, if they're searching, if they're thinking, Lord, I pray, Lord, you would give them the best route possible, custom tailored for them, to give them the evidence that you have supplied by what you have done. The thing that you did that inspired this book. The something that happened, Lord. I pray, Lord, you would create a means, give resources, even if it takes some money, whatever it takes, some time. Of course, it's going to take time, Lord. I pray that you'll make a way for that. I pray that you help them come to a conclusion about who you are, Lord. And for those of us that see ourselves as Christians, but sometimes think,